with more Inside the Clubhouse.
He got the cutter in, and he deposits it into left field. Luis Robert Jr., cue the fireworks here on Saturday night. A solo home run, his 14th of the season, and the Sox add another, make it 7-3 here in the eighth.
It is Inside the Clubhouse here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Highlight courtesy CHSN alongside Bruce Levine, Mike Esposito in for David. Today we are broadcasting live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. And to talk a little White Sox, let's head on out to the Circa Resort and Casino hotline, CircaLasVegas.com.
And Mike, we are pleased to welcome in one of the best writers in Chicago, writing baseball on the White Sox almost every day during the season, James Feegan from the Sox Machine and Fangraphs joins us. And James, I guess on a cold winter day with the snow coming down, it's only great to think about spring training and the Chicago White Sox going into 2026. But listening to Chris Getz, as you have with me and the other reporters after the season and in at the GM meetings in Las Vegas, what are your takeaways from what the White Sox will be able to do moving forward? Is it more young players being able to build, or do you feel that free agency will be a part of their rebuild this year?
It'll be a part of it. I think it'll be similar to what it was last year, where it's kind of rounding out the roster with useful people who can serve in roles. I don't think he's been trying to prepare everyone for the idea like free agency is not what's going to, transform the identity of this team, or you're not going to get a player who's going to be like the engine for this team, like taking a step forward next year. I think a slate of, 1 year deals around where they kind of have big holes, certainly the outfield. He's talked about wanting a left-handed corner infielder, and they need a starter to kind of replace what Martin Perez's role was last season. It's things like that rather than, you're going to see them make a big move and, talk about their, taking the division this type of season. I don't think it's going to be that type of winner.
James, we heard a Luis Robert home run coming into the segment. He's obviously, until something is done on his roster spot, whether he's moved, traded, whatever, he's going to be a huge topic of conversation. Chris Getz, I know, has said all the right things, but what do you think ends up happening? Do they deal Robert this offseason? Do they hold him through midseason and see what happens? What do you think?
I think if I had to pick a lane, I would say hold him until midseason. Certainly like when the deadline was coming around last year, polling like other teams, their stance was, we feel like the White Sox are being kind of unreasonable. We think they're valuing this guy for what his potential could be, or off the ceiling of 2023. And, if you bring those claims back to the White Sox and say, like, well, we'd rather, hold on to him rather than sell him low. Like, this is somebody who's, until we see a more prolonged run from Colson Montgomery, this is, kind of the face of the franchise a little bit. Certainly like the most recognizable and marketable player. I think they would rather hold until, obviously they've kind of put their money where their mouth is at this point, hold him and get something that really creates impact as far as the return than just say, well, we've gone this far. It doesn't seem like it's turning around. Let's just cash out for what we got, even if it's just kind of a 40 grade prospect or just kind of the best what the market will offer, but not really an impact addition that's going to move this team forward. So I don't think there can be that big of a condition switch this offseason where I think it's more likely to happen than not. At the same time, if the deal comes along like tomorrow, they do it because that's kind of the spot they're in as a team. So you can't say like, oh, for sure, bring your Luis Robert jersey to opening day, because that's kind of still where their standpoint is. I just think it's less likely than more likely.
And with 1 year left on his contract, isn't this a bit obsessive for Getz in his first go around as a GM to be holding on and expecting back a high return for a player that hasn't really warranted it for at least a couple of years now? The hit tool has just not reappeared for some reason or another after, you know, a breakout season 2 years ago. So for White Sox fans, for the franchise, do you feel it's better off that they move on from Luis Robert and, you know, the obsession with, well, he was a great player. We want to get two or three players back for him because we think he might be again.
I think if, like, in terms of, like, what, like, if we break down their likelihood of what sort of value they're going to get, certainly just kind of selling at some point, whether it's now or even, you know, this past offseason, maybe that would have gotten them as much or better than they would have gotten in the past. Certainly, you could look back and be like, man, why didn't they sell him post-2023, knowing where the team was about to turn after that. But I think the potential reward, the impact of selling now is what they view as marginal enough that as far as putting a guy that you can at least have a puncher's chance of him increasing his value, that fans recognize, that is kind of, a talent level where there's, a bit more entertainment level on the diamond on the night. I think these are supplemental things. They're not like what his top priorities should be, but they're, given that the return is right now wouldn't be something major. I think it's not nothing to consider, like, hey, let's entertain the fans a little bit during this very difficult process to watch this team. If the alternative, what we're shooting for, isn't really some great shakes to be chasing anyway.
Yeah, we always forget he's hurt every 5 minutes. So that's a part of the equation as well.
That is. That literally could open up some playing time for Everson Perea when that happens this year.
Talking White Sox with James Fegan for another few minutes here and Inside the Clubhouse on The Score. And you talk about the face of the franchise and fans waiting for excitement. I think they got that jolt, at least, I know a lot of us have been waiting for it. When Colson Montgomery was called up on the 4th of July and all he did was hit 20-plus home runs. And there are lots of people excited about him, and I would like to think that he will continue to make progress heading into 26, but he certainly has to be your leading candidate for future face of the franchise, right?
Sure, he could be. He certainly got the potential to be. He's not, like, the most stable prospect, like, in terms of, like, hit tool flaws. I think he's kind of got a little bit that with Robert where it could – he could wax and wane and is threatening like a 30% strikeout rate. I think he's going to always, because he has so much power, because he's pretty athletic, being a shortstop, he can make kind of these longer rangy plays. He has a big arm. He's going to be one of the more entertaining players of their current core throughout. Whether or not like he's going to give you more war than like Kyle Teal being a good hitting catcher, I don't know. Whether he's going to be better than Brandon Montgomery or Noah Schultz, I think that could look pretty even, but I think with him being personable, with him being, playing a very visible position, and like when Colson Montgomery's going well, it's not like a type of value you have to explain to a fan, like, hey, he's playing good defense and he gets on base a lot, sort of thing. It's, hey, did you see that 470-foot home run? That guy's pretty cool. So even if he's not the franchise player, having a entertaining player who you really kind of like enjoy watching, and his best work is like something you watch on highlights again and again, I think that does a lot. So I think he has a good chance ending. I don't think he's him number one with a bullet, but I think it's important to have guys who are fun. Like, this is entertainment. This is something for the fans, and Colson Montgomery plays his best work is extremely watchable. It's very compelling.
That's the voice of James Fegan from Sox Machine and Fangraphs. He's on Inside the Clubhouse, Mike and Bruce, until 10:30 today on The Score. James, when you look at Will Venable coming in last year, where none of us really knew him, I knew him a little bit from his coaching time with the Cubs. We knew he was a smart young guy who was going to be probably the right manager for this team. What did you learn about him? What do you think he learned about managing in the big leagues that he can take forward with him in 2026?
I think he is, I mean, this is maybe boring to say, but and certainly a cliche you hear a lot, but I try to really mean it with him, is that he's a straight shooter. Like, doing post games with him, it wasn't like an interrogation to try to figure out what he felt about like the one bad play that night or the thing the team that screwed up. He addresses everything matter-of-factly in a way that almost, you know, diffuses a little bit, you know, the post-game interview. It's not a, he defends his team. He doesn't rag on his guys, but he's going to say what's wrong with, you know, the performance, what's lacking. And I think for a White Sox team that, you know, certainly the franchise the last 10 years spent a lot of time hoping or pretending or expecting to be better than they are, I think talking kind of straight about what they're facing, both inside the clubhouse and publicly to us, I think that was very refreshing and also gave me a bit more confidence that this was not somebody walking into something they didn't realize or didn't realize how challenging it would be. Like the degree to which he was a straight shooter with us was really disarming and something from understanding. I obviously only covered him 1 year, but this was somebody who wasn't super comfortable dealing with the media before or someone who was, you know, talking with media all the time or making lots of comments. He's pretty straight up. Like this is a lot more media I've ever done. I had to work on this a lot. So the fact that this was like kind of a new task for him, and I thought he had brought a lot of natural skill with it, with how kind of accountable and straightforward he was with everything, I thought that was really encouraging.
I think that's a really good analysis of a guy that, as you explained it, James, just diffused the media, you know, elephant in the room talk immediately by addressing it and moving on. No expression, no apologies, just saying, we're going to have to clean this up. Here's what we have to do. So from that perspective, I agree with you that I think he exuded some confidence about who he is, what he had, and what they had to do moving forward.
Yeah, confidence, I think, was the thing he projected. He was very secure. Like, I think fundamentally dealing with, you know, the way avoiding talking about like what's wrong with the team, I think reflects the security. Like, hey, I know that I'm the manager of this team. I know there are things wrong with it. I'm going to, but I don't think that means like if I admit that I'm incompetent, I'm going to be fired. I think he understands that he knows what he's doing. He deserves this job, and you know, thus feels comfortable talking publicly about what still needs to be done. If Lenin Sosa like makes a bad base running decision, he doesn't try to convince us he's playing 4D chess. He says like that was wrong. He should have done this, and then we move on. And I think that's a healthier environment.
Don't you like to be BS'd by a manager? What's wrong with you?
I mean, it was a thrill the first couple times it happened, but you know, now I've been around the block before, and now I like it a little different.
Last few minutes with James Feegan from Sox Machine, and James, Miguel Vargas, one of the nice, I don't want to say surprises, I know they had expectations for him, but after his first year with the Sox, after they traded for him, was so bad. He really contributed on many levels last season. He got shuffled around in the infield as well. Is he the third baseman? Is he the guy that they put there and keep there? Or what do you think we see from Vargas in 26?
I think he's mixed between first and third right now with the way things are currently composed. And certainly I think the ideal Getz and Venable roster has a lot of like platooning or matchups where it might be a little bit difficult for guys in the tier to say like, hey, he's our everyday third baseman. I think what Miguel has established with the year he had last year is like, this is the guy who can have a role on a competitive team. I think what they hope he can establish and what's still kind of the question for him is this guy who's someone who we build around? Is this someone we win with, or is this someone we win because of? And I think he's still kind of figuring out where he is in that tier. Do we see the guy we saw in May with, you know, as much power as he able to produce, you know, for longer stretches of the season? Do we see less of like kind of the difficult April he has? Does the mechanical change he make put that away for good, or do we see a guy who kind of, you know, can carry you from some stretches and, you know, provide decent at bats throughout, but maybe is not the, you know, the huge impact offensive person, or, you know, someone who can play at third base but not quite good enough to play there on a super regular basis? I think he's kind of a middle ground. So as much as last season was a huge offseason for him, getting stronger and, you know, making his swing a lot more viable than it was when he first came over, I think carving himself out as a defined starter, as an everyday player, I think that's still the road ahead for him to find out this season.
James, thanks so much for the time today, this weekend, and look forward to seeing you next Sunday. It's coming along really fast in Orlando for the baseball winter meetings. Look forward to seeing you there. Thanks again, Mike, and I appreciate it.
I'll try to pull myself off the beaches of Lake Michigan to head out to Orlando.
Okay. Take care.
Bring your shovel. That's James Fegan from Sox Machine and Fangraphs talking White Sox with us here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
Let's head out to our phone line where we find James Fegan of Sox Machine. James, happy Thanksgiving. It's starting to get a little chilly here. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. But we're talking about the catcher position and if the White Sox are going to move on from one of their catchers, because they once again going into this year have a surplus at the position of good young catchers. What are your thoughts on the situation? Do you expect the White Sox to move on from one of these catchers? And do you think they should move on from one of these catchers?
So I thought like your comparison was helpful because you're talking about like what your value for moving them one right now would be. And you could kind of get an equivalent value for, you know, a different position, which is like not like a finishing move, but maybe something you're doing as you're trying to form your team more into like taking a step forward in terms of contention. It would be helpful, be useful to make your roster make a little bit more sense, but they're still kind of in the adding value stage. I don't think you could, like, you traded Garrett Crochet, like, obviously that's the best player in the deal and most useful, like, present value player, but you multiplied it into, like, potentially, you know, three or, you know, two to three, you know, main players. I don't think you could multiply with, you know, Kara or Teal. You're not turning them into, like, two future prospects or something like that. It's kind of, like, equivalent but shifting position, which maybe is more of a move for next year. And certainly in talking to, like, the White Sox, both privately and like publicly, they've kind of said, yeah, that's something we're going to consider at some point, but this offseason's probably a little early for that. And I think it's both like that factor and, you know, if you're probably, you know, picking one between two, and I definitely think they're kind of internally tilted towards Kyle Teal at this moment. With Caro, you're definitely not trading him at top value. Like, I don't think, you know, he had a good rookie season, a solid rookie season, his bat played there, you know, like he got good reviews from the pitchers, but in terms of like the questions about what his framing will be down the road or how much power will that be able to show at some point, I don't think you're at the peak of this. And you know, kind of them believing in Caro, I don't feel like they feel like they would get what the top price would be at this juncture, and believing that he has more upside to show. I think if you're really considering both where the team will be in a year where it's more like let's form this into a really full lineup, and also
yeah, James, I got
better player than he was his first year. I think next year makes a little bit more sense for that.
Yeah, speaking of Caro's potential, something his home run number, his slug numbers weren't as high. Do you think there's more power in that bat? Because how I look at Edgar Caro is he is a plus bat at the catcher position, but you start to move him into that DH role, and he's not necessarily as much of a plus bat at that role. Do you think there's more power in that bat, or there's more to see from him at the plate too?
Certainly more than he showed last year. I don't think he's a, you know, 25 home run guy like the exit velos never suggests that in the minors, but he had consistently hit like 15 homers a year in the minors. And I think something like that is more reasonable. He struggled against right-handed pitching more than he normally does last year for a mechanical reason that he was pretty open about near the end of the season and looking towards fixing, and kind of was optimistic about what the torpedo bat was doing. So I don't think he's going to be a guy who, you know, can't slug 400 the way he was kind of dealing with being a singles hitter and, you know, singles and walks guy this past year. I think he can be a 10 to 15 home run guy. I think he can slug over 400. I think there's more doubles and extra base power in there, especially if he kind of gets his mechanics in place against right-handed pitching, which what really is he's able to prop up his line by just feasting on lefties as much as he did last year, which speaks well to the tool. But I don't think we've seen the full capabilities of the left-handed swing yet. So I think there's a little more there.
James Fegan of Sox Machine joining us here on White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. Speaking of unlocking some power, Luis Robert, I feel like this was last offseason's question. It's this offseason's question. Might be next offseason's question, too. What would your prediction be right now for Luis Robert? Is he on the roster at opening day?
Yeah, I think so. Like, when you have a team that's open to trading him and, you know, maybe not the strongest free agent market, I can't say like, yeah, put it in ink or anything like that. Like, it's still a little bit flux, but I don't think there's going to be a major change in what his value was and how the White Sox were approaching it from this trade deadline over the winter. Certainly not after he got hurt and kind of, you know, it was kind of both his second half reaffirmed what people thought about him in both ways, where you saw him be a lot more productive, but you also saw the injury side of it, which is why his value has been tricky to pin down. Other teams thought the Sox were holding out for what Robert's ceiling was in terms of trade value. They weren't just trying to, you know, get off him, and the White Sox kind of said that we're okay with that. We're not going to try to, you know, sell somebody who's been really important to our franchise and we think has potential just for like whatever we can get, if it's not going to be impact. So I think they're content to wait around, and I don't think that the value is going to change in some big way until he starts playing well again and stays healthy for a long period of time.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't think they should trade him at this point. I think you got to hold until he starts to show some of that potential again, especially at the plate. He's always going to have the speed, but you need the potential at the plate. Maybe some of these new assistant coaches can help bring that out of him. You just wrote a really good piece that I read on Sox Machine about Zach Bove and what he can bring to the table. It was very in-depth, and I appreciated it. We also just played some of his quotes about limiting walks and controlling the base paths as well. What do you think the main things that Zach Bove, the new pitching coach for the Chicago White Sox, replacing Ethan Katz, what do you think Zach Bove brings to the table?
So one thing, like, he's very open-minded. I think, you know, two children of the internet like us can appreciate, like, someone like him who entered in the coaching. You know, he didn't pitch like at a high level, so, and he was like a hitting coach at where he was originally at, and they switched into pitching. So as much as, you know, he pitched in college a little bit more than us, but he really learned a lot of his trade by, you know, reading up on driveline or watching interviews with pitchers and seeing grips. Now he had the opportunity to apply them with pitchers, you know, and do a lot of trial and error more than the average person. But it's someone who's very, like, open to outsider sources of information. But that said, going into, like, specifics, like the things the Royals did last year that you would love to see come over is obviously they controlled the running game really well, like best in the league by far. And the White Sox have been, you know, a laggard in that area really for the last 5 years. Not even when they were good, they didn't control the running game very well. So bringing some of those tactics would obviously be useful, but, you know, something Bove mentioned specifically is that the Royals had a lot of success with expanding guys' arsenals, where even if they're a four-seam guy, just having throw a couple sinkers in the game just to throw off hitters and make it a little bit harder to square up. You don't need a great second fastball or something like that, but something to throw off hitters and add a little, like, you know, hitch to their timing was something they had a lot of success, and, you know, they didn't allow many home runs just because they were not very easy to square up because they're always throwing different shapes at guys. So you saw a little bit of that with the White Sox last year, you know, some fits and starts with it, but somebody who's coming over has had a lot of success and, you know, made some young pitchers like Chris Bubich and Noah Cameron outperform expectations with stuff like that. I think that's kind of what you're hoping for, especially with some of the guys like Burke or Cannon, you kind of felt like stagnated at points during the last year and had to get sent down for portions. Giving them some extra tools to get through hitters, to get weak contacts, that could lead to them getting closer to maybe what we expected them to end 2025 looking like.
Yeah, I think you saw a few pitchers last year, Shane Smith being one of them, that just added an extra pitch and it took them to the next level. And if that's something the White Sox continue, it's clearly something the White Sox organization and Will Venable believe can take a pitcher to the next level. So if he continues to do that. One thing I noticed that Zach Bove said, he said on the CHSN White Sox podcast in his interview, he said that they asked him what he sees his rotation being. And he did. He said all the guys who were in the rotation last year are going to have a chance, but he also believes there's some guys maybe coming up through the system that could have a chance at the rotation next year. Do you think there's anybody that might be going under the radar or maybe even one of those top prospects that we could be looking at as a key part of this rotation next season?
Well, you got a lot of potential areas of influx. We've got a lot of guys coming back from TJ. Obviously, that wouldn't be like a big thing until the All-Star break. It's really the earliest you could really bank on anybody, but Drew Thorpe, Kai Bush, guys who we're thinking of at the end of 2024, seeing them, what they can do back, that could be one avenue. They were really hoping that Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith would be guys who were knocking on the door at the end of this past season. That didn't happen with Schultz getting hurt and, you know, Smith struggling with control more than they anticipated, but good healthy springs where either one of them can put them on the doorstep, and they obviously both have this upper level talent where they could kind of shoot through very quickly as long as the organization's willing to try them out. And I think they are this year. But, you know, somebody I've been high on from when they were drafted, just on the raw tools he had, who really put it together last year, Terry McDougal just got added to the 40-man. That dude can throw upper 90s. He has two very nasty breaking balls. He barely used his changeup last year, but that's the pitch he's been throwing since he was like a little kid because his dad wouldn't let him throw breaking balls when he was little. He's got stuff where if, like, he's throwing strikes now and he was – last year after he really like dedicated himself to his offseason conditioning and went to, you know, Cressy Sports Performance in the winter, which he's done again this year. He's a guy I think can really pop. I don't know, like, if it's starter, I don't know if it's like a Grant Taylor type of multi-inning nasty reliever role, but like that's impact stuff in the system that put himself on the doorstep of the majors last year. And that'd probably be my sleeper of, you know, who could kind of surprise you, because I don't think that's a name that was really being touted as the future until what he was showing down the stretch last season.
Yeah, 3.23 ERA in Double A last season. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is the highest level he's played at so far Double A, I believe? Do you think he's going to be one of those guys that could make that jump straight from Double A to the big leagues and make the opening day roster?
I think if he were doing that, that would probably, like, it would take like an awesome spring training. And I feel like if he started out in the majors, it would probably be more likely in relief. And, you know, he's even said as much than starting. I imagine a little bit of like, I know they're a little bit wary of putting guys they really care about in that Charlotte environment. And Tanner's not like a big ground ball good dude who would necessarily be protected from how homer friendly that place is. But I think he's a guy who probably breaks in midseason a little bit more, especially, you know, he got up to 113 innings last season, but he hasn't thrown more than that. So I don't know if they step on the gas pedal to have him up in March that might lead to him running out of innings, but certainly someone, if he pitches well midseason, you can see him doing something and looking exciting.
Last guy I want to ask you about here, Braden Montgomery could fill a very key outfield spot. Where do you see him in the calculation here? A, as the White Sox address the offseason, because they probably need another corner outfielder, at least outfield depth. Where do you think he plays in terms of how the White Sox are going to plan out this offseason? And will we get some indication based on how the White Sox do plan this offseason as to whether we'll see him this year?
I think he is your long-term, like, as we stand today, obviously he has to perform. Like, he's your right fielder of the future. I don't think that happens opening day. I think that's something he has to perform really highly to make it a mid-season possibility. There are some strikeout issues there. It got close to 30 in Double-A. It's not like it's something you can just coast by. But I think you still have to round out your outfield like you're not going to get contributions in Braden Montgomery. I think you need legit starters there. You can't just have somebody who's going to, you know, be a placeholder for 6 weeks and then, you know, just be Braden for the next 10 years. But I definitely think you are viewing him as someone who's looming in that long-term picture rather than you're trying to get like your right fielder of the future on the open market this year. That now they're in a position right now where they just need outfielders of any stripe and they can't be too picky of it. Like, taking a chance on like Everson Pereira in that trade, that's exactly the sort of stuff they should be doing. So you might see them kind of stacking post-hype prospects like that. But I think Braden's still probably the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, of who you can really look in the system and say, like, I think that guy has a future role in this outfield. Whereas, you know, beyond Luis Robert, there's not really that many certainties in the outfield right now.
All right, James Fegan, a Sox machine, joining us here. Last question I have for you. Any names or any players you're keeping an eye on this offseason? Anything you heard for the White Sox?
Not really. Like, I think everything's going to be in that 1 year. You know, I think if the right situation emerges or if it's a, you know, starter they really want to eat any, you can see them throw out a 2 year deal. But I feel like it's so many. It feels like a lot like last season where it's like, hey, can we build like a veteran platoon in the outfield corner on the cheap here? Or do we need one like kind of steady infielder around this out this mix rather than seeing somebody who's really going to come and be, you know, a star contributor or you're even like an everyday guy really clearly. I think they kind of have to scrounge around and be opportunistic, like whose market kind of falls, who kind of needs an opportunity for playing time to reestablish what they've been in the past, or who's kind of a prospect who's kind of run out of runway at another team who, you know, used to look like a top 100 guy, but now just needs a chance to play. I think that's kind of the level they're shopping at. And, you know, that can be hard to predict. That's kind of, you got to be ready for your opportunity to strike there.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time, James. James Fegan of Sox Machine joining us on the Gingling Guest Hotline. James, stay warm out there in the snow. It's getting messy out there. Stay warm and happy Thanksgiving.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Thanks for having me.